So today on the Neil Wilkins podcast, I'm joined by Erin Krask, who is an award-winning brand strategist. And when we say award-winning, we really do mean that because there is some news hot off the press for Erin that is going to be very exciting to share. So we'll go there in just a second. But we're going to, in this conversation, we are going to be talking about purpose-driven strategy, because this is something that's very, very close to my heart. And it is a big driver for pretty much everything I do. And I know from Erin's perspective, turning from purpose to profit strategy guide has been something that has been very, very important in Erin's development, I guess, as a humanistic leader turned business author, turned advisor and executive coach for conscious, social and ethical business rebels. So this is going to be a fascinating conversation because we're not talking to any strategist here. We're talking to somebody who is actually, I think, quite rebellious. So welcome to the podcast, Erin.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the introduction. I just feel no pressure after such an introduction. I'm not even sure I can open my mouth without it looking back. You know, am I saying something right? Yeah,
but let's begin with the award winning, because that is something that is literally hot off the press. You've got some big news to announce, and I'm really glad that I'm going to probably be the first podcast that's going to hear this news.
That's definitely, well, pretty much first everybody, because I only announced it to a couple of people so far. So yes, I got my first awards, and I'm very pleased because now it's awarded book in the category entrepreneur and small business books, and also for the best book design. So I'm now award-winning strategist, author and designer. It just feels good saying that.
Doesn't it? Yes. Now that can be something that whenever you meet people for the first time, they say, so Erin, what is it that you do? Well, let me tell you.
Yes, you know.
And of course, you can bring the book out as well as the certificates and the awards and everything else. So, yeah, life is well set for you. But let's go back a little bit, back kind of to early Erin. I mean, talking about, you've been in business for 20 years now in terms of strategy and leadership. What was early Erin like? Was early Erin a rebel at that stage?
Yes, she has always been, because she was born that way. And it's a fun place to be in for a couple of reasons. The first one is that apparently rebels are natural born leaders. So that's something that comes naturally. And it is about inspiring and igniting. So obviously there are a few skills that you need to polish, but you don't shy away and you feel comfortable in the role. Thing number two, they see bigger picture. And because my second personality is actually into details, so somehow naturally I see both. And up till recently, I thought that everybody is like that, and apparently people are not. Because I thought it's okay, you can see both, you can navigate between the two. Another thing, rebels are change makers, right? Because you have to not conform to address something that is not working and to suggest a different solution. And for that, you need to be brave enough to do so. And another thing is, again, it's not just change makers, but they're challengers. So when you work in marketing, especially when you build brands, I mean like proper brands, not product with branded products, the best approach that I found is about challenging the whole category. Because if you want to have visibility, especially when you don't have enough resources to do so, the best way is just say, okay, you know, duck it all, I'll do it all my way. And that immediately enhances visibility of your brand. And it also creates recognition, because you don't challenge for the sake of challenging, but you challenge it to address the needs and wants, specifically wants of unserved clients. So by doing so, you immediately gain their respect and interest, because you are one of very few brands that talk to them directly. So yeah, you have a lot of benefits of being a challenger. At the same time, it may actually, I guess, shorten your career, or, you know, kill it prematurely, because it's not somebody that big corporates, at least those that I know, were very fond of. I did have few leaders that were self-secure, they were comfortable in their roles, and they let me do what I thought was necessary for the brand. So I had full belief and trust in my ability. But in other companies, it really doesn't work in my favor. So really, it depends.
I mean, as a young Erin kind of growing up, I'm really interested to kind of explore that journey of kind of becoming a leader as a female rebel in, as you say, lots of organizations where it can be potentially male dominated. There can be a certain framework or pattern of marketing and business and process that you need to follow, particularly in a corporate where, you know, a lot of systems are already in place. How did you kind of manage to survive, let alone thrive in that sort of an environment? Because that in itself is a challenge, because it feels like it's always going to be a battle, isn't it?
Oh, you know, I just didn't see it this way. I was confident about my skills, about what I can bring to the table. As most women nowadays, especially those who make their careers, I was driven on male energy, that is, you know, status and drive and achievement. So I was no different from other people or, you know, other gender in the company. So I never felt anything of being in minority because of my gender. I didn't think about it this way. In my world, everybody is equal. So why would I consider myself to be anyhow inferior?
I love that. I love that attitude, is that it's down to you as an individual, as a person. The rest is detail, and that's personal to you. It doesn't matter. Yeah, as long as you're performing and rebelling and challenging and delivering, that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, because inferiority is all in our heads. It depends how you perceive yourself. If you want to see yourself as inferior, if you want to see yourself as victim, you're going to see it in everything and everybody. And if you don't, you won't notice. I chose, you know, to believe in myself.
Did you feel you had that advantage then of being able to see big picture and the fine details in equal measure? Because some people, I certainly work with a lot of people who I would say I could put into one box or the other box, but there's very few people I would suggest who can really clearly see both sides. Do you feel that was an advantage for you?
Now looking back again, because all the time I thought that I'm like everybody else, everybody is like me. So I never paid attention, but when you work on strategy, the strategist is a fantastic advantage because you can see several steps ahead immediately and you can immediately see different directions, possible directions. So, you know, this yes-no flow chart, it just pops, you know, up in my head and I immediately see the direction where it can take and what's supposed to be the next actions. But to support it, I was going down to numbers because I'm also analytical and I enjoyed looking at the numbers to support, you know, all the plans that I already had in my head. It was just, yeah, it was happening naturally. And now I understand it's an advantage, really big one. But before, again, I just didn't pay attention, just was natural. Yeah, it is fun, actually.
And I guess that was something that allowed you to kind of accelerate your career and the development and the areas that you went into. Where did you see some of the biggest gains, the fastest kind of progression in terms of your career then? It is, again, still in those sort of earlier days.
Well, I was progressing in brand strategy for a couple of reasons. So the first one, I was really enjoying launching the brands. So I didn't really enjoy managing them, you know, through the life cycle. That was kind of a little bit boring. But to give a good start, to do the whole analysis and market analysis and customer analysis, because I love psychology and I'm persuaded that brand strategy is psychology before anything else, right? And I'm quite artistic. So, you know, combining arts and psychology is like, oh my God, that's the job that was created for me. And yeah. Because, you know, when I was looking at market development and launches, for me, it was like a puzzle of many, many pieces that I had to put together to create a beautiful picture that I can sell. And this challenge of making something totally different and something that would be successful, again, irrelevant of the resources I had, that was absolutely, that was giving me passion. And I so much loved what I did. So, yeah.
And I guess from that ability to be able to see big picture, look for those, I guess, trends, those kind of things that are emerging in the marketplace, and then get down to the level of the detail in the data, the numbers, the evidence to kind of back up that you are taking the brand or the business into a launch in the right way. I guess it's that beautiful sweet spot of mixing those two things together, because as I said earlier, you know, for most people, I think it's probably, yes, I'm great at the big picture, but all data, no. Or somebody loves getting into the data, but, oh, well, I can't see how I'd use the data, but I'm good at data. It's almost like you were kind of born to do that leading from the front.
It definitely looks that way. And, you know, another thing about data that I find totally fascinating, my latest setup, you know, to find a job or to move back to the corporate, I was inundated with different tests, online tests, and one of them was math. I guess I am good, but I don't feel like I'm good, right? I never enjoyed it. So I can obviously make the test and be quite successful in it, but I wasn't enjoying it. And it was every time I was so annoyed. It's like, why do you make me go through it? Because as a strategist, I'm not supposed to be able to count, you know, in the meeting like that. I have a calculator, I have Excel. I'm supposed to be analytical. Do you understand what actually my role is about? It's not about counting, but it's about reading behind numbers. It's a different skill set. And yeah, so I don't believe that people realize it nowadays, unfortunately. And another thing, when you were asking previous question in terms of the career, you know what? It was actually very, I think, promising in the very beginning, you know, because I joined one of the best marketing school, one of the best strategic companies in the world. And this is what people were appreciated for. And I also happened to work in another company and with another guy. So yes, in certain places at that time, it was really needed and appreciated. And then I started learning that strategy is not trendy any longer. And, you know, more I was progressing with a career, the more challenging it was for me to find a job, because people couldn't understand what I'm talking about, because it wasn't necessary. And I find it absolutely fascinating, because there's so many businesses right now that have no idea about strategy. They don't understand why it's actually needed in the first place. They don't do anything about it. They struggle. They struggle through business. Smaller companies, they fail quite often. And again, something that I keep on saying very often, but I don't believe people realize, you know, when you have all the statistics about businesses failing within the first 3 to 5 months of operation, 3 to 5 years, the point is that these 3 to 5 years, it's called strategic planning period. So is it kind of a correlation between businesses not having strategy and 50% of them failing, and another 25 failing next 2-3 years? You know, why nobody pays attention to that? Why everybody pays attention to innovation? That is kind of, you know, a new kid in the block. But innovation, again, it can be purposeful, it can be strategic, or it can be routine for the sake of innovating because everybody does it. It doesn't mean that your business requires it, because any innovation is such a massive deployment of resources. So it better be strategic, or you do it purposeful. You know that it's not product related, but something else related. You still innovate, but you manage your cash flow, you manage your money. Yeah, there's so many things that's happening that's like, okay, I was going through interviews and people like, what are you talking about? You know, because I was doing the analysis every time before every interview, and I could see that, first of all, people didn't like what I was talking about, because often the analysis wasn't good, because I couldn't even understand who these businesses were targeting. So that just, you know, how do you do it? And yeah, and so forth and forth. So I think, yeah, in terms of strategy, it's something that is not in need at the moment.
Do you think that's because for most organizations in what is a really tough economic climate, and also, you know, obviously the speed in terms of technological advances, AI, etc., there's just so much happening that means for a lot of people who aren't strategic, it's just easier to focus on the tactical day to day rather than worry too much about this uncertainty of where we're going in the future. Do you think it's just in a lot of cases because it's just easier to be in the immediate term rather than worry?
Well, you see, the thing is that it's not easier. It is more challenging. Because if you don't plan for future, if you don't plan your resources, if you don't plan your answers, and shit happens, and it will sooner or later. So either you're prepared for it or you are not. So I don't really understand how it can make business easier not to have a strategy. It's much more resource consuming. You have much more uncertainty. You have much more stress because you don't even know how to react and you're not prepared for anything that may happen. You are changing directions because you keep on trying new best practices and new things. And when you change directions, what happens? Again, you waste your resources. And this particular time is also human resources because people work hard and they see no result coming from their efforts. Another thing in terms of strategy, so it's mostly about planning resources and being ready. So yeah, I do believe it's going to make it much easier if you have one. There's one thing, again, when I was writing the book, I thought about it, and I thought that why nobody questions the need for the strategy in a war, and why it becomes redundant in the marketplace where the fight for every share point. Or another analogy, what do we think about a person who speaks without thinking first? So it's not perceived to be virtue, right? You're supposed to be think first and then you say something. While in business, we just say something nonstop without thinking behind it. And with regards to easiness, I believe that it's not what drives businesses. It's more about the trend for instant gratification. So either they want to see immediate return on investment that we'll talk about in a minute, or probably they're pushed by investors that also want to see the immediate return on investment. So it's a kind of double-edged sword from both sides. But the problem is that return of investment, it doesn't mean profitability. That is a totally different thing. And profitability of your business, it's long-term. It comes from long-term planning, not from immediate tactical activities. And it's actually... it does much more wrong, you know that, right? Because it affects your customers, it affects category margins, it affects your consumption patterns of your products or usage patterns. So all the things that actually come from short-term promotions that lead to return on investment that with time going to be lower, lower, and lower because it's not sustainable. So again, and profitability comes from strategy because it's being built longer term. I guess every business chooses, you know, the approach they want to take, but I would argue that what they do currently, it's not the best approach.
Do you think this is why we've had such a challenge with this whole idea of purpose-driven strategy then? Because for most organizations and businesses where tactics have been the flavor, tactics have been the trend, and so there is no strategy, but actually then adding in a purpose-driven strategy becomes even too hard to think about, let alone plan. Do you think it's because of short-termism? Do you think that is the key barrier to having a purpose-driven strategy? Because you talk about ROI, you talk about profitability, there needs to be patience, doesn't there, as you say, for those things. But have we got time for a purpose-driven strategy? That's a key question, isn't it?
Well, you know, what do you mean, have we got time?
Well, I think this is, I know we have, and I know the right answer here, but I think for a lot of businesses, they don't feel they can dedicate the resources to this because it's not showing short-term return necessarily to have a purpose-driven strategy, because I can just go away and sell more products. I can, you know, reduce our costs. I mean, okay, you could say, well, that could be purpose-driven because your carbon footprint drops, but let's just focus purely on consumption and the usual capitalist commercial model, which is sell more, you know, make more profit. That can be a short-term thing, which if we don't have strategy is okay. But if you want to have a purpose-driven strategy because the market demands it or because Erin says it's important, that's going to be difficult, isn't it? Because we have to be patient and wait for that to really deliver, don't we?
Any strategy, it's not about instant gratification, right? So whether it's purposeful or not, you're not going to see, you will see certain return on investment, but you're also going to see contribution to the profitability and longevity of your business. So it just, the immediate return of investment probably going to be lower than you would expect from a promotion. And also because you look at different indicators. It's not only about sales, but it's also soft indicators, such as your brand indicators or communication that will, with time, accumulate, you know, to bring you to the place where you want to be profitably. So, but any strategy will be about long-term planning. And the question is, what do you have time for? If you have time, again, running like a headless chicken, you know, changing employees because they're not happy or because they're disengaged, because you don't have resources, you know, not having the opportunity to communicate your brand, because obviously it's going to come as an afterthought. Nobody's planning communication as an opportunity to drive sales. It's always something that we don't have money for because we believe that we drive sales through sales personnel, which is not correct, because you drive sales through people buying from you. It's a very big difference. So from this perspective, really, you know, you just value where's my time? Either you sit down and create your strategy. You know, I don't know, you may need 2 weeks to do it if you have some market data that you used to analyze, otherwise it may take longer, or you just continue in the same pattern. The choice is, you know, everybody make their own choice.
So if you were sitting then with a decision maker, I won't say what kind of discipline we're talking, could be finance, could be the MD CEO, it could be marketing, it could be, I don't know, it could be anybody within an organization, but a senior decision maker. How do you, if you feel it's an appropriate business that should be creating and developing a purpose-driven strategy, how do you start to persuade them, convince them that it is the right thing to do? Because you know the answer's right, because you know their market, you know the kind of opportunities they have, but they just haven't seen it yet. Where do you begin your storytelling, or your, if it's data-driven, of course, the evidence, where do you begin to convince them? Because I've always struggled with where to start that conversation, because if they're busy, like you say, being a headless chicken and chasing the sales because they have this perception that every month they have to deliver the sales numbers and we haven't got time to look at anything else, where do you begin that conversation? Is it through where you're going to get competitive advantage? Is it where you're going to protect your brand for the future? Or is it something else that I'm missing?
Well, first of all, you know, to be honest, I gave up on convincing people because I don't believe as a coach that you can convince somebody who doesn't want it, right? Nobody will ever change anything if they genuinely don't want this change. So I'm off this, right? If somebody wants to carry on running the business the way they did, it's their choice. It has nothing to do with me. Those people who see that something is not correct, you know, they will already know to things. And from this people, with these people, it's easier to talk because you can indicate all main mistakes that businesses make. And in my book, I have like a list of mistakes made by businesses. And every business is going to recognize themselves in this list, right? So if they won't continue, again, to do their own way, it's absolutely fine. If they don't and they want to change it, then we can discuss, we can look at their indicators, you know, where they are, what the struggles are. You start with SWOT, you know, and then from the SWOT as a strategist, I immediately can see, because they will be very often operating on a tactical level, while I can see whys behind how-tos. So I can ask them questions that they didn't think of, and that immediately going to lead us to a strategy, because any why is your strategy, any how-to is your tactic. So, and with regards to purposeful, you know, because you asked me about it earlier, again, strategy is strategy. With regards to purpose, first of all, it's just a trendy word, and very often I change it for meaning, because meaning isn't that overused. But the point in purpose, unless you are really driven by a certain mission as an entrepreneur, the purpose, as I see it, is actually more on the cultural side of things, because purpose and contribution, daily contribution, are directly linked to mental health and resilience and stress levels and motivations and team engagement. Right. So you may not want to edit. Don't edit if you don't believe in it. That is just without a shadow of a doubt. If you don't have a purpose, don't invent one. Because if it's not genuine, your team's still going to see it. It's useless. You're going to be under pressure of creating something meaningful while it means nothing to you personally. But if you have one, the one that you believe in, then it's just going to make your life easier and your mental health healthier.
And I think that kind of that starting point then of, you know, the penny needs to have dropped. Somebody needs to have hooked into there is a reason why this is important before they would engage a coach like you, or before they kind of start to plan, or before they start to maybe change some of the processes, systems, and thinking. What happens then if somebody is that they're at that stage, so they're in an organization, maybe a medium to larger size organization, they say, Erin, look, we've got this desire as a team. The rest of the business doesn't understand it yet, but as a team, we get it. We know we need to do this. We've seen the opportunity. We read your list of things and reasons why we mustn't avoid this and we need to do it. But we don't have yet the buy-in from the rest of the organization. So say maybe marketing, for example, here, marketing manager comes to you and says, Erin, we need your help to be able to translate this opportunity into the business. We don't have a seat in the C-suite. We don't have a seat at the director's table, but we want to be able to sponsor being meaning driven or purpose driven or value based or whatever we want to call it. How do then you support an organization like that, where there's a team, just a small number, maybe of people who do feel they get it? What can they do?
It's a very good question, and I don't know. I don't know because I don't know the culture of this company. I don't work with mid-level leaders because, unfortunately, if the culture doesn't accept creativity, if the culture doesn't respect people's opinion, if the culture tells people what to do and then micromanage, if the culture is driven by control and authority, I don't believe that mid-level leadership, as fantastic as they may be, can do anything in this company, right? So I can't see the point, because what I'm going to do, ultimately, I will be coaching them for exit, so they can leave and find a better place for themselves with their values and their talents and their desire to do something better for business and for our environment, for our life, than just, I don't know, stroking ego of somebody else. So there's no answer. You know, if there's somebody else is open, then we can definitely work with a team, you know, to create this purpose. But at the same time, again, the thing with the purpose is like the same thing with the values. I worked for organizations where some people didn't even know values. in other organizations, people did know values because they were in a corridor on the wall. Did anybody leave these values? No. So yes, we can create a purpose because we want to please customers. I think it's called greenwashing in a certain way. But if we don't live and breathe it, then what's the point, honestly? If you feel like purpose is required, you know what? Go and find a company that is like-minded.
So this is an interesting one.
It's a radical advice, right?
Yeah, well, I love the honesty, because I think what you've just described there then, Erin, is this is almost then this migration of people who understand both strategy and, I'll still use the word because people understand it, purpose and being purpose-driven, yeah. Right? It is a bit of a cliche now, but we understand what we're talking about. So if those two things are felt by somebody, but as you say, culturally, it is just too hard to try and see that through in an organization. They're going to migrate somewhere else. They'll either start up their own business or they'll join a like-minded business where they can actually do that. Yeah. Are we going to see then a polarization in the coming, well, probably not too many years, where there'll be purpose-driven organizations and then clear water before we then see the other organizations who are very much kind of in the old school or the old method of doing business? It feels like there's going to be real kind of difference here, and that we'll have a certain type of culture and a certain type of person on one side, and then everybody who's working to the old model on the other side. It feels like you can't then translate across. You're either in one camp or you're the other. Am I following the logic here?
Yeah, it definitely feels this way. And I believe that it's already growing, you know, this division, because all younger generations, they are more purpose-driven. They're more driven by goods, doing good things, about preserving the environment. So these values, they come naturally to them. So I would believe that younger companies, yes, they try to do something better for all of us, while older generations, it's probably, I'm just generalizing, but it feels like this is where the division is coming from. And then it's not only, you know, the funny thing is, when you have this culture that respects people, that respects the environment, respects animal, whatever we want to respect, it doesn't really matter, but we do respect something and we do care about something, this company is going to attract better employees. So it's really, it depends. You know, if you want to attract better people, if you want to have your company sustainable, that probably you need to do something about your leadership team. Send them to me, you know, because I do transformational coaching. So we're going to get to your pure goodness that you were born with, although it's not my target audience. But yeah, so, you know, your business is as good as your leadership team. As very simple. If you want your business to be sustainable, then, well, do something about your leadership style. Oh, that's totally honest. Ooh.
Yeah, and it needs to be. You know, I really appreciate your honesty, Erin, because I think there are too many people, in my view, trying to make this work, and there are too many people just pushing water uphill or attempting to, and it is so difficult. You know, there are so many, as you've said, you know, I don't know the answer to that question about how do we convince people. I would totally reflect that and say, you know, I've been doing this stuff now long enough to know I don't think there is actually the right answer there. So why do we keep asking the same question? Well, you're clearly not. You've moved on and you've got the right answer. So let's think about a company then. So I've decided that the company I work for, so I'm a marketing manager. I've tried, done my best. It hasn't worked. And now I've come over to the other side. So I'm in an organization now where, yeah, the likes of Erin can help me. I'm in the right kind of culture. Things are starting to move forward. Where are the wins? I know you talk about achieving profitability flow as being something that's really kind of an important element within, you know, doing a purpose-driven strategy and building a real kind of business for the future. Is that a starting point? Is that where we should all begin?
Well, I guess if we talk about the profitability flow and my approach to profitability, first we need to begin with foundation. It would be a little bit, you know, I guess illogical to start with profitability before the foundation is built, right? Depending on the stage that you're at in your business, the different things that shape your foundation. It's going to be your belief. It's going to be your purpose, because purpose is strategic. It's going to be your value proposition or business model. It's going to be absolutely your philosophy, because I personally believe that only ethical businesses can win easily, or it's just easier to be ethical than to be unethical. And then there are different profitability streams. The purpose or the meaning of profitability flow model is that it's not only about profitability, it is about daily improvement. So every day, little by little, you make improvements to different profitability streams. So they end up, you know, bringing your, so your company becomes better on a daily basis and ends up bringing profitability to you. It's not about striving. It's not about trying to kill yourself getting to this goal and getting this profit. It's about doing it on a daily basis, little by little, so you can see holistic. It's kind of, I call it holistic and mindful improvement, you know, amongst different profitability streams. And another thing why I really like this model, because this approach, together with some other things, it's all about mental health. This is why it's called flow. Because any type of, again, burnout, disengagement, stress, all the things, they affect our mental health. And I don't believe that running a business has to be so stressful, it has to be so damaging as we make it. So if there's an approach to achieve this profitability so it is less impactful on your health and on your team. And this is why I call it flow, because flow is something that is effortless, right? That comes back to you. You don't push it. So yeah, that's the point of the whole model and the approach. So not only it makes your company better, not only it makes it more sustainable longer term, I'm talking about longevity, more than like environment, more about longevity, but it also takes care of your mental health.
We keep coming around to the whole people thing, don't we? We've talked mental health there. We've talked culture. We've talked about different disciplines. Strategy is all about people, according to Erin, then, isn't it?
It's not about strategy that is about people. The whole business is about people. Because, again, let's twist it. As I said earlier, that you don't earn money because you sell something. You earn money because you buy something. So if we look at it from this perspective, who is sponsoring your business? Going to be your clients and customers, right? Without them, your business is not going to survive. So these are people. Then let's talk about partners, because partners are vitally important if you need them. And if you hire a partner, then it means that you need their help. Doesn't mean that they have to be treated appropriately, because they help your business. It's not because you give them money so you can treat them as slaves. As I saw it before, in advertising agencies, pure, poor guys, you know, account managers, account executives, they work 24/7 and they're really treated badly by some customers, by some clients. It shouldn't be that way, because they are enabling your business. If you don't want them, try without. There's no problem. But if you need them, then respect them for what they do. And now let's talk about employees. It's exactly the same approach. It's not like they come, you know, into knocking your door, I want to be in your company. They come when you post an advert that you're hiring somebody, and you're hiring somebody, why? Because you need it. Because your business appears in a position where they need specific skill set of a specific position or person. I don't know how people, you know, do different businesses. Some of them look at people as leads, for example, or employees. In reality, they're all human beings. And if it is so, if you think that you need this person to help drive your business, then I guess you, the best you can do is to appreciate what they give you. And it's not about salary. It's not about bribing them. It's not about buying them out. You need them first before they need you. Yes. And this is why I believe that business is about people, because it won't survive without.
It is quite a simple thing, isn't it? If you're not in the right place, you find somewhere that is the right place. If you don't resonate with the culture, you find a culture that does work. If strategy and business is all about the people, and even though we say it's a purpose-driven strategy, actually what we mean is it's about getting the right people around you to do the good things, isn't it, really? This is quite simple, isn't it? This is not complicated. So why is it so hard? If it's not complicated, why is this so difficult for so many organizations?
That is a very good question. I had a conversation lately. One consultant, he was hired by his client to fix productivity. And when he was talking to me about his task, he said, so yeah, the client asked me how we can improve productivity or stamina or morale, whatever it was in the organization. And I asked, oh, so it's about how to improve. And did your client task you to find out why there was no productivity, engagement, and morale in the first place? We all do how-tos, right? And unfortunately, I believe to answer your question, we need to ask why. And very often, as I said, your business is as good as your leadership team. So if the leadership team is not ready to face themselves as the reason behind underperformance of the company or of their team, there's no other reason. There's none. It is the leadership team.
So if you are a leadership team and you feel like you'd like a rebel amongst you challenge you, to give you a chance to reconsider your position and your culture and everything else, is Erin the right person to be in contact with? Are you the person who will go in there and will shake things up? Because it feels as though having somebody in there like you talking to a business like that, where they know and they have a desire, but they just haven't figured it out yet quite how to do it. Are you the right person to be talking to?
Well, to start with, I don't position myself as rebel any longer, you know, because people freak out. They're like, okay, why would I push it if people don't really appreciate it? So, because it's quite scary. But I will be the right person because I can see several steps ahead and because I can see behind what is invisible. I do have this ability to see something that people don't notice. And I care. I really care about my clients and the companies. And I also know that change, even the most positive one, it's massively scary and uncomfortable for many people. And if somebody decides that they will pursue this change, I appreciate them just for this big step. So my role is to make it as comfortable as possible so the person enjoys the process. Again, all my proposition is about effortlessness. And even coaching, even change, has to be as effortless as it possible, so the person is not afraid to engage into the process. So this is what I can offer. But then again, it's not down to me. It's the person who wants to do it or doesn't.
You have to be ready. So if somebody feels ready and they think that would be an interesting conversation, I'm up for this. How do they connect with you, Erin?
Well, I do believe, we haven't discussed it, but I do believe it's going to be the link in the show notes.
So we can do that.
Exactly. Click it away.
Okay, that's all good. Erin, this has been a really interesting conversation. I just love the whole idea that purpose-driven strategy is around the people. And actually everything else is just detail. So, you know, it's given me a really interesting new perspective on that. But also the fact that if it's just too difficult for people, just move somewhere else, go somewhere else, go where the flow is, I think is what Erin is telling us to do. So, Erin, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you again, Neil, for inviting me. Thank you.